This is the Extravagant Promises Podcast, and I'm your host, Gregory. Dear Lord, I come to you, 48, humbled, broken, crushed, a sinner on bended knee. I am lost without you. I am lost. I beg your help. Please see me through this time of terrible heartache, sadness, stress, and anxiety. I simply cannot do this. I am at my end. I have two daughters who are so beautiful and loving. I have squandered your gifts. So many gifts. I shall serve you. I shall love you. I am nothing. I am worthless. Please save me. Please save me. GWB 6/21/15. Today is July 19, 2022. My name is Gregory B., and I'm an alcoholic. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. And I sponsor other dudes who are working the steps, trying to stay sober, trying to find recovery. I've worked the steps myself several times. My sobriety date is July 19th, 2015. Today I celebrate 7 years of continuous uninterrupted sobriety, nights, weekends, holidays included. And this is episode number 56, Lucky 7. What I read to you at the beginning was a letter I wrote on Father's Day in 2015. As you can tell by the text and the letter to God, I was all out of options. I was having a full-blown panic attack and a mental breakdown. I was, at that point, about 18 months into a high-conflict divorce. I was separated. I was living in an apartment that was very nice. I mean, by many, many accounts, it was very nice. But, you know, it was a long way down, a long fall for a 48-year-old. Very successful at one point, successful, false pride, false shame, false values, false arrogance, everything false, but successful trial lawyer. I was a drunk. I was trying to drink my problems away at night. I wanted to die. I saw my girls every other weekend. They were doing the best they could. They were amazing. I was, on the other hand, not. I don't think. I mean, I was trying to do the best I could. I was trying to run the firm that I had founded. I was trying to manage my life, and my life was unmanageable. Plain and simple. Every night, I would wake up at 3:30 in the morning, my heart racing, covered in sweat. the fan. Didn't matter how cold I had it in the place. I was pounding sweat out of my body and the heart pounding and the fan above me pounding. And I just wanted to be dead. I would ask God to please take me at night. Take me. I had to make a promise in those days, like to the child psychologist that we had hired to help the kids, you know, grope with or grapple with the, help the kids manage the divorce, you know, and she had said, I had to promise not to kill myself. Here I am, a grown man, you know, by all accounts in some people's line of work and all that, very, very, you know, up and up and all. And I was, and I never did anything wrong in my professional life. I never wronged any clients. I never lied, cheated, stole, nothing, you know, but alone at night, I just wanted to be dead. And, here I was just asking God to take me. I'd promised this therapist that I would not kill myself because she said she had had a client kill himself, and she had to tell his two daughters that their dad's body was in the driveway, and because the mother couldn't do it. She said, please don't do that to me. And I said, okay, I won't, but I'm holding on by a thin thread. I'm holding on by a thin thread. And I said the words, I'm worth more dead than alive. That's what George Bailey says in It's a Wonderful Life. I'm worth more dead than alive. I would get daily texts. Usually they would start around cocktail hour from people threatening me, telling me they were going to kill me, telling me I was a piece of shit, I was worthless, I didn't deserve to die, to live, that I was a liar, a cheater, a stealer, you know, of my marriage, and that they were going to take everything I had, they were going to take my firm, they were going to bankrupt me, they were going to run me out of town, they were going to ruin me, and that I would deserve all of the hell that was coming on me. I would get texts from my mother, who was in league with my ex, and telling me that people were watching me, and that I couldn't go anywhere without being seen, and that I better go keep an eye on my car. And I don't know, you know, I mean, sometimes it would be like in code, like you're being, you know, cute code kind of to fuck with me. But you know, I'd be under my car at 3 o'clock in the morning looking for bugs or electronic devices or whatever. And like, just, you know, if they could mess with me, they mess with me. You know, if it was, something like, you know, it really didn't matter. You know, I would get, if I took my daughter on a boat trip, like, and I mean, like, we were on a vacation and we rented a boat and went out on the water. If, you know, if my ex found out about it, I would get hit with an email. You son of a bitch. You think you can spend money on your daughter? You can't, that's mine. You know? Maybe it sounds really petty. I don't know. But you know, in my state, especially with the professional life I had, which was high conflict, high intensity, high chaos litigation, you know, courtroom work, you know, I was fast getting to the point where I felt I was worth more dead than alive. And I definitely was worth more dead than alive, but I thought I was worthless. And these are the words I said on Father's Day. I am worthless. I am nothing. Please save me. Please save me. Amen. You know, and I like to think, this was the moment when my version of, you know, the steps where it says came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. You know, I came to believe, meaning I journeyed to believe. This was the moment my journey began. I believed in God. I believed in a higher power. The concept, all this. I mean, I knew, you know, there's something there, but I was never raised religious. I have no faith. I had no real understanding. No concept of a higher power that loves me. It was more, you know, just really more theoretical than anything. But I wasn't an atheist. I wasn't agnostic. I wasn't anything like that. I did believe, but I didn't really know how to believe. I didn't know how to have faith. I didn't know how to trust. I didn't trust myself. I didn't like myself. I didn't love myself. Why would I know or trust God? I just didn't know. And I wrote that letter, humbled, broken, crushed. Help me. Help me. Save me. About a little more than 3 weeks later, one of my angels, I call him, who's been on this podcast before, you know, was sitting in my apartment with me. His name is Eamon. Eamon, if you're listening, and I know you are, I love you, brother. I owe you my life, just like there are a number of people I owe my life to. And I'll come back to that, but that's where I was, you know. And Eamon said to me, that my brother, who he also knows, he said, your brother's worried about you. And I said, how do you know? Did he say something? You know, y'all talking? Whatever. He said, no, I could just tell. And I said, well, what's he worried about? And he said, I don't know. And I'm going to do this in an English accent because he's British, you know. as we Americans know, everything sounds cooler and more intellectual in a British accent. So here goes. He said, I don't know, but I'm worried about you drinking. I don't know if that was good or not, but that's what he said. I'm worried about you drinking. And I said, and this is where the letter and the letters and the petitions to my higher power start to look at that, you know, journey to believe. I'm coming to believe, you know, is this a sign? Is this somebody, is this God speaking through my friend saying, like, the answer lies in those rooms? And so I said, will you go to an AA meeting with me? He said, yeah. And we walked into a meeting. I won't say which one. We walked into a meeting in Raleigh, North Carolina on July 19th, 2015. And I saw somebody I knew who I admired greatly. I didn't know was an alcoholic. I didn't know was in recovery. Somebody that I really admired and had worked with. And I was a mess. I was crying. He put his arms around me. He said, hey, how are you doing? I said, I'm not doing very well. And he said, all right, let's do this. And he became my first sponsor. And I love that man. And you know, if you're listening, and I know you are, you know who you are, and I love you, and I owe my life to you. And we have trudged the road of happy destiny ever since. So that's how it was. You know, I was, I'm not going to say, like, okay, I walked into a room, and all of a sudden, I didn't want to kill myself. I didn't feel worthless. I didn't feel that God had shunned me. I didn't feel that my kids deserved a better dad. No, I felt all those things, and it took a while, but the first step was, it was kind of like that first step of admitting that we were powerless over alcohol and that our life was unmanageable, and coming to believe that a power higher, greater than ourselves, your higher power, you know, the idea being, hey, there's a path here. I mean, my biggest fear, to be honest, dear listeners, it was that they were going to tell me I wasn't an alcoholic. Your problem is something else. And I mean, I'm sure there are, I have lots of other problems and character defects. I mean, many character defects. But I was like, what if this, they're like, this, we're not the answer to your problems. Your problem is you need to, you know, get a bankruptcy attorney or something, or, you know, get whipped 1,000 times. Well, who knows? You know, I was afraid that was what was going to happen, is they were going to out me and say, oh, you're not an alcoholic. Your problems, you don't identify here, you know, whatever. Which is classic alcoholic behavior. Your disease does not want you to stop drinking. Your disease does not want you to have a higher power. Your disease does not want the best you. It wants to kill you. Why would it let you do good things like this? It wants to convince you to convince yourself that you don't belong there. That's the resistance. That's the disease talking. You know, you don't belong here. You're, oh, this isn't going to work for you. You're still going to want to kill yourself. You're still going to want to, you know. I was afraid. I was in denial too. I mean, it was like, you know, I think about this of like people who have, you know, you name it, whatever it is that happens to you or that you are or whatever, like that you don't want to admit, you don't want to say the words, I am an alcoholic. Because if you're a smart person, you know that the moment you say I am an alcoholic means you can never have a drink again. You can't be an alcoholic and kind of sort of drink. You can't, you know, it's if you're going to recover. You know, it's like you're diabetic and you're saying, I'm going to admit I'm diabetic. Like I can't, and again, please don't hate on me about my lack of knowledge about diabetes. There are other things that you could say. You know, it's like a spinal injury. You know, having denial, like I can walk again. I'm going to walk. And the doctors are like, you have a complete spinal injury. It's never going to regraft itself. You can't walk, you know, or you can't, you know, you don't want to admit it because all of a sudden you're not going to be running marathons. You know, you have to have that radical acceptance that I am something, and maybe this is where, you know, turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand him. Maybe that's the path to salvation. Maybe that's the path to redemption. It's in surrendering that we win. It's in forgiving that we are forgiven. It's about understanding that we understand. You know, all these things, you know. That's where I was. You know, I was in denial because I was like, you know, people know me as a drinker. You know, people love to drink with me. I love to drink, you know, I haven't done anything yet, you know, but it's like, chances are, you know, if you look at your history, you've been there for a long, long time. And normal and sane people would say like, yes, you have a problem. You're a problem drinker. You have a problem with alcohol. You are an alcoholic. But this is why I will never take any drugs or anything like that that can cure you. I don't take drugs anyway because that it would break my sobriety. But you know, if they said, well, hey, we've got a pill, Ibogaine, whatever it is, that can cure you of alcoholism, which I wouldn't take it because I don't ever want to drink again. I don't ever want to leave Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't want to lose my conscious contact with the God of my understanding. I'm sorry, sometimes I get a little emotional when I read that letter and I think about that young man, not so young, 48, you know, on my knees in a crappy little apartment. I don't have my kids. I feel like I'm going to lose everything that I've worked 30, 20 some years, my career, everything. I feel like it's all going to go away. And I'm like, God help me. And guess what? God did. That's the thing. That's the thing. You don't have to be a faith-based person, evangelist, whatever, to understand that my trajectory, my journey, I came to believe and I asked for help. And help was there. And it was through that help, that program of Alcoholics Anonymous, that taught me and nurtured me and comforted me and put my higher power wrapped. That's how he wrapped his arms around me. That's how he gave me angels on my side. I don't know if that's how your program is. I don't know if that works for other people. I have suspicions that it will work for other people and that it is that way, but my suspicions don't matter. What I know is my experience, my strength, my hope. So that's how it was. That's how it was 7 years ago today. So what happened? You know, in the sense of how did I do it? How have I done it? I don't like how did you do it? Like you already did it and you got there in the finish. No, I did it for a day. I got 1 day. That's the world record, is 1 day. You know, I just happened to have strung a whole lot of days together without a break. But all I got is today. How'd I get today? Well, the first thing I did was I redefined success. And I apologize. You know, a lot of this y'all have heard in these last 55 episodes before this. But you know what? Today's my sobriety day. I need to tell the story to you. I redefined success. I redefined my existence. I basically decided that my sobriety and recovery and the love of my higher power in this program was more important than anything else in the world. Even more important than my own life, because I realized that I could not have a life if I didn't have my higher power and I didn't have sobriety and recovery. I convinced myself that I made a promise to my kids, even though they didn't know it. I made it in my, it was a living promise that I would not die drunk. I knew that if I was drunk, I would take my life. And I said, I'm not going to die drunk. And I promised my therapist, I'm not going to drink. I promised my sponsor, I'm not going to drink. And I became a man who keeps his promises. But in order to keep those promises, I knew that I had to be sober today. And that I had to commit to Alcoholics Anonymous, and that it could be the only thing that could be the most important thing, because everything else would follow from it. I would be, you know, no one could ever convince me that I'm a better dad when I'm drinking. No one could ever convince me that I was a better lawyer when I was drinking. No one can ever convince me that I'm a better person when I'm drinking. All I know is I don't want to kill myself when I'm sober. I did when I was drinking. I did things that I'm not proud of when I was drinking. You know, have I been perfect ever since in terms of behavior? And I've been sober ever since, but have I been perfect in sobriety? Heck no. But the point is that I decided that day that my sobriety was the most important thing in my life. And therefore I redefined success. And success was, well, let me add this to it. I redefined success and I made my universe very, very small. My world was very, very small. What did that mean? What it meant was victory or defeat came as a plus one or a zero, respectively. Plus one was I did not drink today. Zero was I did. And I had to multiply whatever the number was. I could add a one or I could multiply times zero. And we know what happens when you multiply times zero, you go to zero. I don't know. I certainly didn't do well in new math or any of that core four or any of that stuff, whatever they were. So all I know is I was taught that you multiply something times zero, it's zero. So I felt like if I could just make my universe plus one, plus one, plus going bankrupt, or threat, somebody threatened to kill you, whatever, just plus one, plus one, plus one. Just all you got to do is stay sober today. Doesn't matter. Nothing else matters, as a Metallica song says. And nothing else really mattered. So, interestingly, when you make the main thing, you know, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Well, how do you define thoroughly followed? How about make the main thing? How about make your universe thoroughly follow? Period. That's it. Don't drink today. Do what it says in the book. That's how I did that. And slowly, slowly, I started to gain momentum of purpose. And then that went, once I got my sea legs under me, so to speak, and I could walk again a little bit, I could crawl, let's say, then you start working with other people and doing more in the program and helping and getting a home group, working the steps with my sponsor. You know, I mean, it took me several months before we would really even talk about some of the steps and the important steps, because I was so beat up, you know, but I was staying sober. I was going to meetings every day, you know, sometimes twice a day, not every single day. I mean, there are days I missed a meeting or whatever, but I didn't drink. You know, I had a very, very good therapist. I had a very, very good sponsor. I made those things the most important, you know, and they loved me and they would return my calls if I was struggling. So that's how that happened. And you start to, you know, you start to put those things together. And there are times when, you know, for me, I had spiritual awakenings or conscious contact, you know, things happened that could not be explained to me in any other way, other than I have a higher power and the higher power loves me and my higher power desires for me to be sober and to be a productive member of society through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not a bleeding deacon. I personally do not serve on business committees and things like that, because my character defects of wanting to take over, wanting to be the man, all that kind of stuff. I need to be humble. I go to business meeting, but like, I don't say anything. I don't want to take over. I don't want to tell people how I think they should run things or whatever. I need to just make coffee. I need to be there. I need to help other people. I need to show up. And, you know, when no one else is, I need to do 12 step work, that kind of thing. And of course, sponsoring other dudes, you know, when my sponsor decided it was time, you know, the first was when I told my story at a rehab center, you know, that kind of thing. And then, you know, some elders, you know, men who I respected, including my sponsor, said, you know, it's time you start working with some other dudes and spreading the joy and the love and the juice that you've got. You need to give it away and start using, you know, retaining and rebuild, replenishing it through giving it away. Crazy concept, huh? So I did. So how is it now? It's amazing. I have an amazing life now. I've been able to do things that I could never have done. I've been able to be the man that I always wanted to be. I've been able to be the father that I always wanted to be. I've been able to be the servant of my higher power that I always wanted to be. I've been able to be the partner to my partner, my girlfriend of many years. You know, I'm able to be the partner that I wanted to be. You know, I've made amends, or I've tried to make my amends to people, even those who hurt me deeply. That didn't mean that just because they hurt me and wounded me, they their program may, or their higher power may one day want them to make an amends to me, but that doesn't matter in terms of me making an amends to them. That's not how it works. It's not like, well, I'm going to make an amends to you if you make it to me, or now you deserve to, or because you wronged me, I can't have wronged you. No, that's what lawyering teaches you is contributory negligence. Like, I was negligent, but you were negligent too, so therefore you get nothing. And it's like, that's not how life works. Life is like, I was wrong. I need to promptly admit it and make an amends for it. And I've tried to do that. Yeah, I have a life worth celebrating. You know, it's hard. Like, I tell this story that, you know, I'd hear this from guys who had, men and women who had a lot of years in the rooms. And, you know, you'd hear this, like, I have a life second to none. I'm in the bonus round, you know, the juice, you know, all these things. And sometimes you're like, you know, I wonder if I believe that or not, or, yeah. And really it's like that's my arrogance. That's my character defect. That's my disease talking like, well, whether I believe it. I mean, the fact that somebody's saying it and they believe it, that's all that matters. They're sober. They got 20, 30 years and they're telling you their life is amazing now. Why is that not good enough for me? It is good enough for me. It's just that my ego and my arrogance want to get in the way and challenge it. But what I can say is that I have a life worth celebrating now. I'm a life. Pride is a sin, obviously, we know that, but a life to be proud of. You know, if you want self-esteem, do esteemable things. Do you want to be proud of yourself? Meaning, do you like the person you are and the way you behave and the way you conduct things? Are you perfect? No, because if you tell me you're perfect, if I say I'm perfect, then, and, oh, it's just going perfectly. It's like, I couldn't be better. Then, you know, you're about to fall. You're about to drink, do something, pick up, whatever. On the other hand, you could say, hey, you know, I try to live with a sense of those plus ones, never forgetting what it was like when it was plus one. Plus one, plus one. And if you added them up, it was 15, 16, 30, 45, 90, 60 days, whatever, 90 days, 9 months, 6 months, 9 months. And then, oh, the magical year that I thought would never come. I thought I was a superhero for getting to a year. So, you know, I heard a woman say, and I've shared this many times, but, you know, I heard a person say in the rooms when I was real new, like maybe my second day or maybe the same night of my first, you know, it was an evening meeting and I think it was the next day after my first meeting. And, I heard somebody talk about how they had DUIs and all this and had lost their job as a teacher, had been banished from the industry, you know, the profession, all these things, and been sober, and she said, I wouldn't change a thing. To me, that's the point where you're like, wow, you made it. And it's not over, you made it. Okay, the finish line, you know, there's no finish line. But I mean, while you're there in terms of like, okay, you get it, you know, that you're doing the work. And it's, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't change a thing. You know, I have to be an alcoholic. It's not alcoholism, it's alcoholism. But I have to be an alcoholic. I have to get to rock bottom. I have to get the gift of desperation in order to find Alcoholics Anonymous and the book that leads me and the life and the trudge of the road of happy destiny that leads me to a world where I don't want to die, a world where I want to live and help, a world where I can be useful. You know, we know that from the 12 and 12, going to read one of my favorite passages that, you know, I remember this old timer read this pretty early on in my sobriety. You know, I was like, he's got magic, you know, like basically like he just knows it. It's wisdom, you know, and this amazing stuff that he can cite this. And he, you know, and yes, he did. He was reading from the 12 and 12, which is in a lot of ways. I mean, it's not magic. But it is profound. It is sacred to me. You know, but today, and this is from the 12 and 12, and it's actually step 12. Let me find, like, what? I got this electronically on my iPad, so I don't know what page this is on. You know, for people who want to follow along in the, it might do that, actually. Hold on one second. So, yeah, okay. Yeah, so this page 184 of the 12 and 12 at step 12. Today, in well-matured AAs, these distorted drives have been restored to something like their true purpose and direction. We no longer strive to dominate or rule those about us in order to gain self-importance. We no longer seek fame and honor in order to be praised. When by devoted service to family, friends, business, or community, we attract widespread affection and are sometimes singled out for posts of greater responsibility and trust, we try to be humbly grateful and exert ourselves the more in a spirit of love and service. True leadership, we find, depends upon able example and not upon vain displays of power or glory. This is where it gets good. I mean, not it's already good, but this is where it gets even better. Still more wonderful is the feeling that we do not have to be specially distinguished among our fellows in order to be useful and profoundly happy. I mean, is there anything greater about your mission in life than to be useful and profoundly happy? If you could say of a person at the end of their life, they were useful and they were profoundly happy, there is no greater definition of success, in my opinion. Not many of us can be leaders of prominence, nor do we wish to be. Service gladly rendered, obligations squarely met, troubles well accepted or solved with God's help, the knowledge that at home or in the world outside, we are partners in a common effort. The well-understood fact that in God's sight, all human beings are important. The proof that love freely given surely brings a full return. The certainty that we are no longer isolated and alone in self-constructed prisons. The surety that we need no longer be square pegs and round holes, but can fit and belong in God's scheme of things. These are the permanent and legitimate satisfactions of right living, for which no amount of pomp and circumstance, no heap of material possessions could possibly be substitutes. True ambition is not what we thought it was. True ambition is the deep desire to live usefully and walk humbly under the grace of God. That's what it means to say I wouldn't change a thing. Because if I go, you know, past tense decision making, or thinking that the history, the past could be anything different than it was, is me trying to be specially distinguished, or trying to be leaders of prominence, or trying to be the big shot, you know, the big wig, the big shot, the big man. It's trying to have true ambition, the false pride and true ambition, instead of the deep desire to live usefully and walk humbly under the grace of God. I couldn't have that without Alcoholics Anonymous. So you've heard my experience. You've heard my strength. And there are many things that I have not touched upon about the strength part of it, of how I did it. You know, my experience was beautiful and suffering and desperate and horrible and all those things, but in a continuum that led to beautiful and loving. My strength was that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. My hope is that you can too. I would like to point out a few of my angels on this seventh anniversary of my sobriety. I'm obviously the man who told me in his cool British accent that he was worried about my drinking. I love you. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for you. And you gave me hope. You worked with me. You did not give up on me. All the drills we did, all the things we did to try to find who I could be in life. My sponsor, who knows who he is, my first sponsor, and my current sponsors, both incredible men with incredible years of sobriety. A lot of years, a lot of wisdom, a lot of love for me that I honestly, as I told my first sponsor, the capital in his account can never run dry. It's so deep. It's so deep, and I owe so much to him. He is such a beautiful man and such a wonderful human being and somebody I admire just as much as I admire any man in the world. You know who you are, and you are incredible. And I'm so grateful that you saved my life, taking my calls when you really had lots of better things to do. Keeping it real, telling me I needed to work the steps. You're going to whoop my ass or kick me out, you know, kind of thing. Like, you know, hey, we're doing it. And we did. My partner, my girlfriend, my love, you know, you know what you did. You know how you did it. You know where I needed it. And you know that, especially that fateful night, July 12th, 2016, when you, my darling angel, came to my rescue and told me the words that kept me on the path, which were, I need you to go to a meeting. You know, I'm gonna leave my kids out of this because, you know, I just think that's just, they need to, they know where they are in my heart, and they know how important they are to this. And it's not right for me to, you know, I want to stay anonymous and keep them out of it, but they know. And if they ever listen to this, they know that they are the Alpha and Omega. My best friend, you know who you are. You sent me a plane ticket when things were really dark in those first 90 days. And you said, come out here. We're going to go hiking. We're going to hang out. We're going to do things. And you're going to go to a meeting at a place called the Sun Club. You're going to go there every day. And if you need me to take all the booze out of the house, I will. But you're going to do this, and we're going to talk, and I'm going to carry you. And you did. And I remember things looked pretty bleak. You know, the 90 days, it was still hard. I mean, my God, this stuff I was going through. And I just remember the sun coming over whatever mountain it is out there and shining on my face. I was down doing a T-bow on my knees, you know, just sitting there being like, please, God, you know, help me through this stuff. And boom, the sun came over the horizon and blasted me right in the face with, like, love. There are a lot of other people on this list, and this isn't an Oscar nomination or an Oscar award acceptance speech, you know, where I'd like to thank my sponsor, I'd like to thank my agent, you know. Two particular therapists they know who they are, and they know how much I feel about them and how. Again, they're in that, I owe my life to you, literally owe my life to you category. And maybe I'll have them on the podcast. I think that'd be kind of cool to bring them on, and, you know, if they can say what their name is if they want or not, or, you know, but it'd be up to them. I got nothing but love flowing through me right now. God, I just feel so much love, so much gratitude. I needed this. You know, there's a lot of turmoil in the world, a lot of anxiety in the world. I needed a meeting that's just like plus one, plus one, plus one. Just do the plus ones, man. Just do it today. just stay sober today, plus one, and it'll all work out. Boy, it's powerful. Powerful stuff. All right. If we're painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. I love each and every one of you. I hope if you need a word of comfort, you'll reach out to me, Gregory B, G-R-E-G-O-R-Y, letter B, at extravagantpromisespodcast.com. Till next time, next week, plus ones, plus one, plus one.